So the 70s, apart from all of that, was a really exciting time to be listening to and writing poetry and meeting poets, as I was lucky enough to do. I guess I started writing in the mid-70s properly, and the American poet Charles Olson had only been dead a few years, and other poets who'd been at the Black Mountain School were really at their peak then. Robert Creeley, a poet I adore and got to know many years later. Ed Dorn was living in Cambridge, although an American, he was visiting England and living in Cambridge when I was there as a student and finishing his epic poem Gunslinger. These poets and others were brought to Cambridge by J.H. Prynne, a poet teacher who had a lot of influence on me and others. And so it was a really kind of fertile time, both for beginning poets like me and rather older poets like Prynne and John James and Andrew Crozier, and then these kind of American elders, as it were, Beat Generation or Black Mountain School or New York School, tending to be American poets born in the 20s, who'd influenced them. So that was all great, and some of the meetings I had then would be of lifelong importance to me, particularly meeting the poet John Ashbery in 1975. It has to be said, though, all of this had a downside, which was poetry at that time in Britain, as is somewhat the case now, was completely dominated. It was like a class system. It was dominated by Faber and Faber, who was the top publishing house. And so the poets were Ted Hughes and Philip Larkin. And nobody who was doing anything really experimental was allowed much of a look-in outside the so-called small press world. And I thought, this is going to be really difficult because I think I want to be involved with this one way or the other for the rest of my life. But even before I can get started, there are these interesting poets in Cambridge nobody has heard of, who've been writing for years. And then before them, there are these American poets who, you know, Faber and Faber and sort of the cultural establishment of the day just wouldn't let in. And I think I was right in the still a refusal to countenance experimentation in British poetry as if it was somehow affected or irrelevant, which you wouldn't have found if you went back to the time when, say, Surrealist poetry was influencing English verse in the 30s, or you had a poet like Auden, who became very much an establishment poet, if you like, but who started out and perhaps always was an experimentalist. So these sorts of issues have been an influence. And where am I going with this? Somewhere completely off kilter now. I'm going to read from a book called Rainer Maria Rilke's Duino Elegies, Barbarously Recast by Me. They were, of course, written by Rilke, canonical German poet, early in the 20th century, and I thought I'd translate the Duino Elegies. Then I discovered that due to a house move, I'd lost my German dictionary. Not to be put off, I started translating anyway, and when I came to a word I could no longer understand, or a phrase I wasn't clear about, I simply took it where it felt like it wanted to go, either working just from the sound of the syllables or inserting things that were just of interest to me at the time. So these are and aren't translations of the Duino Elegies by Rainer Maria Rilke. They're about 60% Rainer and about 40% me. I put in the flyleaf to this, the moral right of the author has been asserted by G.W. and R.M.R. in a dream.